In this hour, my partner in crime is my co-host. This and every second hour Thursday here on the Leslie Marshall Show, the Inside Scoop edition of the program. And tonight, we're going to have two scoops for the same price. How's that? Free. Mark Levine, a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. Mark currently hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show called The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus as well on Pacifica Radio. That's WPFW 89.3 FM inside the Beltway. Frequently, you can catch him on TV and Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Biz, and CNBC. He's tangled with Bill O'Reilly on the right and his Pacifica co-host on the left. And he and I tangled last time he was on, but I think we agree on this one. We're going to be talking all Syria and many, many angles on this all night long. By the way, if you want to join us in this and next and every hour, give us a buzz, 888-653-7543. Follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall. Tweet me there. Follow Mark on Twitter, at Mark Levine Talk. Tweet him there. Our website's LeslieMarshallShow.com or Mark's is MarkLevineTalk.com. Mark, good evening. Welcome, my co-host. How are you, buddy?
You know, it's split conservatives and liberals, so you never know where even your friends stand on this one.
Oh, my God. I've had some of my liberal friends be, you know, so actually, you know, not to me, but I was waiting to go on Fox, and Alan Colmes said, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are saying, he goes, I really think Republicans are being hypocrites who, you know, supported the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he goes, you know, where are they on this? And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm sure he's thinking I'm a hypocrite because we have so much to talk about and so many calls to take already, which is just awesome. I love when you bring food to the party.
I bring a lot of food to the party because I've been talking about this issue for 2 years now. A whole bunch of people are saying, you know, why is this suddenly an issue now? If they've been listening to me, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and I've been doing it on your show as well. And so I know that a lot of my Syrian friends are planning to call in, and that's probably why your phones are already full.
First of all, let's talk about a number of issues that come up. Okay, one. When there was genocide, as there was in the Sudan, Darfur, we didn't act. Should we have, and does that make President Obama a hypocrite in a sense for ignoring that? Because some people would say, well, if Syria were in the continent of Africa, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, I am proud to say I've been consistent in every context. Anytime there's genocide and we are able to prevent it, I'm for doing that. I advocated that we should do something in Rwanda. I strongly advocated recently in Darfur. I advocated really anytime because I believe that, frankly, I think there's actually only two reasons for war, period. One is self-defense, and the other is to stop mass murder. And any other ground for war, I find kind of suspect. But I do believe in this second ground because I think we have a moral responsibility as human beings and as the most powerful nation in the world to prevent mass murder when we can.
Okay, some people would say, well, that sounds good, Mark, but the president had an opportunity for a long time. Even some Republicans and many liberals are saying, why now? He waited, you know, so long, and that we should have done something long ago. So I know that you support what the president's doing trying to defend these people because genocide has occurred, and we're going to talk about so much tonight, not getting all of it out in one sentence, but have we waited too long? Have we waited too long? Because what bothers me timing-wise here is, and the further time that we're waiting to go to Congress, is it gives Assad a step up in hiding those, destroying and hiding arsenals, moving chemical weapons, perhaps even moving the chemical weapons out of the country, for crying out loud, and making it harder for us to have definitive targets, which has been a problem since last spring and early summer, and part of the reason some people think that we didn't go in earlier.
Well, yes, we've waited too long. That's why I've been advocating for 2 years that we needed to strike. I made an impassioned plea. If people go to my website, they can see me back in October 2011 making an impassioned plea to save lives when only 3,000 innocent Syrians have been murdered at that time. And I said tens of thousands more will die. And now, of course, it's over 100,000. That's a prediction I wish had not come true, but that I made way back then. So it is late, but better late than never. The United States is often late in humanitarian crises. We were late in Kosovo, but we finally came in and we saved the day with an air campaign, no boots on the ground. In Libya, I advocated our intervention before Obama acted. He finally did act, and we can argue about whether it's been a success. I think it has. I think Libya is better off now than it would have been if Gaddafi had gone into Benghazi and killed 500,000 people. That doesn't mean it's a paradise. It means it's much better off than the alternative. Frankly, we were late in entering World War II, so we've often been late, and it's never good to be late, but absolutely better late than never.
Okay, so I want to ask, were you for or against invading Iraq?
I was against it.
Okay, and so was I. But I've already shared, and I know my answer. I've shared before with the listeners and on television. Why were you against going into Iraq in favor of it here, not going in, but getting involved? Because some people would say, Saddam Hussein was, committing genocide on the Kurdish population. There was evidence at the time or sketchy even at best, some people would say, evidence of weapons of mass destruction. So why were you supportive? Why are you supportive of this and not then?
I find it actually very easy to distinguish between the two. And I also find it ironic because I was in the minority both times. When we had the drum up to the war in Iraq, maybe 20% of Americans opposed that war. I was in the 20%. And then in this discussion, at least at the beginning, only 20% or so of Americans wanted to do anything in Syria. That number's grown now. It's closer to 40%. And I actually think it's going to be a majority by the time we act. But I've been in the minority both times. To me, they could not be more different situations. In Iraq, now it's true that Saddam Hussein did gas the Kurdish people. I'm a big fan of the Kurdish people. I even, frankly, support more independence for the Kurds and wherever they live. But that occurred back in 1988, before I was on radio. And frankly, Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. supported that action because they were fighting, they didn't support the gassing, but they didn't do anything about it because Saddam Hussein was somewhat sort of our enemy against Iran. I don't agree with that, but I wasn't actively involved in politics at the time. I couldn't really make an opinion about it. But since 1988, and since particularly the Gulf War of 1991, we went in and destroyed pretty much all his weapons of mass destruction stocks. Saddam Hussein had nothing left. And what George Bush argued was he may still have weapons of mass destruction. He may still have chemical weapons. And if he has them, he might just use them. That was Bush's argument. Compare that with Syria, where there's no question that Syria has them, and there's no question that they use them, and there's no question that they used them last week, not 15 years ago. You don't go in and say that, we're going to invade you because of what you did 15 years earlier, when the Iraq War was 15 years after Saddam Hussein had used those gas weapons. So much stronger case for Syria, and we're doing much less. In Iraq, we had boots on the ground. We had tens of thousands of American troops, which leads to casualties and massive death. Obama's not proposing boots on the ground. No one is. I'm certainly not. I'm advocating, frankly, a no-fly zone, which is more than what Obama has advocated, very similar to what we did in Libya and in Kosovo. But so in Iraq, far less had occurred, and Bush was advocating far more. In Syria, far more horrors have occurred, and I, along with President Obama, are advocating for far less. Even the Free Syrian Army hasn't advocated for American boots on the ground.
Like I said, so many questions. Also, Afghanistan, did you support that?
I did support it because, like I said, there's two reasons to go to war. One is self-defense, the other is mass murder, and I did think that going into Afghanistan was self-defense. However, I think we should have left a heck of a lot sooner. Once we went in there, Al-Qaeda's hold on power, we should have left within a year or two, and then, stayed around with, I'm fine with using drones to bomb terrorist bases and so forth. I don't think we did much good in Afghanistan after the first two or three years we were there.
How about dropping bombs and then sandwiches, the good old, fashioned cowboy George W. Bush way? I mean, even people that supported Afghanistan, I don't think we're happy with the way we did it and the outcome for the people of Afghanistan and that country with the way we chose to, quote, help.
Well, Afghanistan is actually a far more difficult country than Syria or Libya or any other countries. Afghanistan is one of the most primitive countries on Earth. And you can't build a nation very easily when you have 15% literacy. And that's just the men. The women had practically no literacy. Afghanistan's a tribal nation living in conditions that we might imagine were around the world 3,000-4,000 years ago. That was a much more difficult task. And the fact that we tried to do nation building was incredibly difficult. Syria is a nation. It has been a nation for thousands of years, and a fairly sophisticated one, where the people are fairly well educated. They're more educated and have, well, at least prior to this horrible event, had more means than a lot of Arab countries. There's incredible poverty in Egypt. You don't find that in Syria. I actually think Syria is a much easier country for nation building, although, to be fair, 2 years ago would have been much, much easier when it was basically a pacifist population being opposed by their dictator than now. Now it is much more complicated. You have Al-Qaeda in there, and I admit that, and it is more complicated. That's why I wish we'd act 2 years ago. But again, I still say better late than never.
Okay. Now, speaking of Libya, do you think that the president should have handled Syria like Libya? Like, look, you know, we got to do this. We got to do this fast. We got to do this now. Congress will come back to you 48 hours later, which he did, and there would be no constitutional violation. And having said that, you know the Constitution, even though I've read it cover to cover, so to speak. You know it much better than I do, Mark, as an attorney that you are as well. Does the president have the authority, because my understanding is that unless he's declaring war, he does, for such an action as Syria? So twofold question there.
Well, we've had this argument among Americans. Really, it dates back to the Jefferson administration when he took action against the Barbary pirates and didn't get a declaration of war beforehand. Yes, you're right. The Constitution very clearly says that Congress shall have the power to declare war. That's it. That's the text. And a strict constructionist says get congressional approval. And I'm glad that he is, because I respect the Constitution and I want that. On the other hand, there's a practice, and the practice has been going on for centuries, of going back to the Barbary pirates 200 years ago, where presidents have acted without the approval of Congress. And I guess it all depends on what the definition of war is. Clearly, when you are invading, you know, putting all your force into a country, that's a war. That needs congressional approval. But if you're doing some missile strikes, if you're doing a limited air action, well, we have to disagree sort of on the range. My view is that Obama didn't need to do this, but I'm glad he is. I'm glad he's doing it because it's educating the American public about a war that really very few people have focused on until now. And it's also, frankly, by bringing Congress in, my hope is Obama can do a lot more than a limited cruise missile strike. I want to see much more powerful action.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, my co-host Mark Levine on the Inside Scoop Edition here on the Leslie Marshall Show every second hour, every Thursday, and for 2 hours tonight, talking Syria, and we'll be talking with you. Follow Mark on Twitter, at Mark Levine Talk. Check out our websites, LeslieMarshallShow.com and MarkLevineTalk.com. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. We're co-hosting the Inside Scoop Edition of the program. Join us. More with you, more on Syria right after this. The Inside Scoop Edition here on the Leslie Marshall Show. I am she. My co-host is Mark Levine. Mark, thanks for holding and staying with me, my co-host here, for the next 2 hours and every Tuesday on the program. Let's take some calls and let's see. Let's start it out with, let me see, Jamal. Jamal in Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Jamal. Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Question or comment regarding the issue tonight?
Well, the comment is, I think we should do what's right and what America has always done. This gassing of thousands of people, including children, we should really draw the line that this is a red line that no one should cross.
Now, Jamal, let me ask you something. Was the, 439 children in the footage that we saw, was that what for you said, okay, that's my line in the sand?
Well, believe it or not, I am a guy who was born right next door to Syria from Jordan originally. And from the get-go, I thought 6 months after the civil unrest there, I thought we should start arming the opposition. When he starts slaughtering people who were standing in the street chanting they want regime change. When the killing started, I thought, and I'm an anti-war person, believe me. I just hate wars. I thought, you know, it's maybe time for us to give a hand to these people who are being slaughtered. And eventually they picked up the arms that they can get their hand on from the regime and start fighting back. But, you know, there is no match. You know, Syria has about a million men under arm, I think. And he has all these missiles. He was shooting Scud missiles for 2 years on civilian population all over the country. Any area he could not control, he would send a Scud missile. You know, I spoke to someone in Jordan last night, and they said, would you think he is going to gas us in Jordan? I said, I hope not. I said, but, you know, I hope we can do this very quickly and destroy his entire arsenal of gas that he has. And at least we would weaken him a little bit, shake his military, and maybe we'll see more top brass leaving the regime into the opposition, and that will make maybe a political solution to this issue more feasible.
Now, Jamal, let me ask you, because you're Lebanese...
You're Jordanian.
Sorry, you did say Jordanian. Because you're Jordanian, and you know you shared that in your experience, being from the Middle East, being from the Middle East. Did we lose the call there, guys?
No, I'm here.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come back to Jamal and my co-host, Mark Levine. That was our short segment, and I think when we put him on hold, that's what that weird sound was. I'm Leslie Marshall. My co-host is Mark Levine. This is the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show, second hour every Thursday, right here, same bat time, same bat channel. Back to you right after this. Don't go away. We're talking Syria. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. My co-host is Mark Levine, and this is the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show, second hour every Thursday, and tonight, second and third hour, right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The show is Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to us on the radio. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall for me. We'll incorporate tweets sent to me, as well as tweets sent to Mark, at Mark Levine Talk. And our website's LeslieMarshallShow.com if you want to email during the program, and MarkLevineTalk.com if you want to email Mark during the program. We'll share your emails, your tweets, your phone calls. Also, if you want to like the fan page of the show, Facebook.com/TheLeslieMarshallShow. Phone 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. We're talking tonight about Syria. Mark, thank you for holding. And speaking of thank you for holding, we also thank Jamal and Alexandria for holding. Jamal, sorry, I was asking you because you were born in Jordan. You certainly understand that area, the Middle East, Syria, much more, I think, than most Americans. Many of them have not been to the Middle East. I have. I've also lived in the Middle East. I've also been to Jordan, by the way. And my, let's just say that my married name is very, very, very popular in your country. And when I visited, I was quite popular in your country. We'll just leave it at that. So under a former very loved king married to an American, a very pretty blonde lady. But so that's all I'll say. So, Jamal, I'm asking is, I think that Americans look at and hear names of terrorist organizations and perhaps view it differently than people who have lived in the Middle East or come from the Middle East and also the conflict there. So I'm going to ask you a twofold question. One, there are many Americans, and I'm wondering, although you're an American because you're of Jordanian descent and you know that area of the world, does it bother you that it's almost like, do we help Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah? Because, you know, obviously Assad has Hezbollah interests supporting him, and the opposition have Al-Qaeda factions supporting them. And secondly, what about the instability in the region that people are concerned about if we strike or if we do not strike?
Well, I think we have misjudged the region many times for the lack of understanding the region. If you remember during the Iraq War, member of the Bush administration, they could not tell what the difference between the Shia, the Sunni, the Kurds, and everything else in Iraq. We are invading a country. These are senior officials. And it was a joke on CNN. I mean, everybody heard it. So when it comes to the entire region, we tend to rely on some people advice, somebody like Shalabi, which is the guy we went and put our support, and then eventually we dropped him because he was just wasn't a reliable agent of ours. in Iraq. The same thing we did in the entire region. In my book, I think every time we back up, just like we did in Lebanon after the Marine building was blown and a few hundred people got killed, some of these Mickey Mouse terrorist organizations think they won. So there is a copycat thing that continued to happen because they said, oh, you hit the Americans or you hit the Brits or you hit the French. When it hurts, they'll pack up and they'll go. Also, we supported a number of dictators in the region over the years because he was our dictator. So don't forget, Saddam Hussein at one time of his tenure was our dictator. So therefore, we looked the other way when he did something morally we did not like because he was our dictator. And Assad inherited this regime from his father, which is funny. It's a republic, supposedly. It's not a monarchy. And his father have killed 20, 30, I don't quote on the number, but a lot of people back in the 80s in the city of somewhere in the Turkish.
Hama.
Yeah, and Hama, yes, exactly. And so we did absolutely nothing. I remember Time magazine ran an ad the size of a matchbox about the entire killing that happened there, and then it disappeared. It disappeared from the media. You know, I live right outside of Washington, so Washington is a political city, and I read everything I can when it comes to that region. It seems like we just don't assess the situation always like we're supposed to. You know, we are much better assessing Mexico than we do with the Middle East. I think as a superpower, we should be able to do the same to any place else in the world. The terrorist organization, you mentioned Hezbollah. Hezbollah was not even in the theater of Lebanon till southern Lebanon was occupied by Israel. And so many people who really hated the occupation of their country felt we're going to help these people fight the occupier. Regardless. And so eventually Hezbollah became this 10,000-pound gorilla that we cannot control, and no one else can control, including the Lebanese, who supported them early in the get-go. So solving the issue, it comes from someone who really has the will. Most American presidents do not get involved because, well, they don't want to upset our allies in the region. Jordan is one of them. Israel is another. The Saudis and so on. I think if we sit and think about our interests, solving the issue of the Palestinian will diffuse many issues in that region. And the number of recruits for radical organization, regardless whether they're religious radical or secular radical organization, will diminish greatly. We don't have to send boots. We don't have to send even cruise missiles there. Diffuse that situation because there won't be anything to rally after.
Okay.
Hello?
Jamal, a lot has been said. Mark, I would love you to weigh in as well. I asked
sure.
Jamal a very
Jamal
good question.
Jamal said many things, and actually I agree with most of what he had to say. The only thing that I would disagree with was at the end when he seems to think that solving the Palestinian-Israeli problem would solve all these problems. Look, I formally support a two-state solution. I have advocated for that, and I'm glad that at least prior to this incident in Syria, John Kerry was working on that. I do hope the two parties can work it out. But I guess the only thing I disagree with Jamal, who talked about all the complexities of the region, was the idea that is the main problem or the problem that would solve all the problems. It's a good problem to solve, and I'm all for solving it. But I would argue the Arab Spring had virtually nothing to do with the Palestinians and Israel's fighting. It had to do with a bunch of corrupt dictators all over the Arab world, whether it's Egypt or Libya or Tunisia or Syria or, frankly, Iran for that matter, although they're Persian, not Arab. it had to do with people rising up and saying that they wanted their voices to be heard, and in many cases being brutally mowed down by dictators, and that really had nothing to do with the Palestinian refugee crisis. So again, I'm not saying that's not an important issue that needs to be solved, but I really think the issue in Syria, for example, has nothing to do with Palestinians and nothing to do with Israel. It has to do with the people of Syria wanting to live freely, and I remember the early part of the Syrian revolution, people coming out in the streets. They were shopkeepers and students and ordinary people. They were pacifists. They did not believe in even carrying weapons. Many of them had never carried weapons before. And Assad just mowed them down, as Jamal pointed out, his father did in the 1980s in Hama. Hama was the fourth largest city in Syria. And his father, Hafez Assad, not only murdered tens of thousands of people, he wiped the city off the map. It became desert. He took a thousands-year-old historic city and literally it flattened it so that there was nothing left there. These are brutal, brutal people. So again, I don't want to get into a long discussion of Israel and the Palestinians. That's an issue for another day. But my point is these problems are broader than that, and they largely have to do with a bunch of brutal dictators who rule the region.
Well, when you talk about, and again, Jamal, thank you for your call. When you talk, Mark, about Israel, because you know you did bring up Israel, and you and I don't agree 100% on Israel.
That's true.
And I'm half Jewish, you're fully Jewish, and that's probably why. But I'm only
you
a half.
You agree with me then.
I'm only a half Heeb, by the way. So there are people that are concerned, and you know, in this country, there are people, you know, that's sort of like, well, I like the Jews more than the Arabs, I'm pro-Israel, who know nothing about the politics necessarily, and they're just speaking as Americans who, mostly in the media, as you know, unless you watch the BBC, see everything pro-Israel, pro-Israel, Israel's always the bad guy, the Palestinians are always the good guy, and Palestinians are always the bad guy, and that is not always the case, so I've seen with my own eyes when I lived there in 96. But with regard to Iran, and new leadership in Iran. This guy, I was talking to a woman here in Los Angeles, and they actually call Brentwood Tehrangelis, and I think you're aware of that, Mark, because there are so many Iranians that fled after the Shah was overthrown. That
right,
came here.
Iranian Jews.
Right, well, not just Iranian Jews, because there are plenty of Jews.
Too, actually.
Right, well, Muslims as well,
yes,
but
they're just the more liberal,
right, not as non-religious Muslims. They're much more about being Iranian, or Persian, as they love to call themselves, rather than being Muslim. So when you look at some of the writings of the current president years ago, translated from Farsi, it's very odd that he seems to want to, prior to the situation in Syria, at first to seem to be open to speaking with the West, be open, you know, and the list goes on, because this is a guy who's got a time bomb of a country on his hands if he doesn't do something with the economy, and the only way he can do it, I believe, is by getting the sanctions lifted. Having said that, this is still a guy that comes from the same group and bows to the same leader Ahmadinejad did with regard to the feeling with regard to Israel, such as the same feeling that Hamas has and certainly Hezbollah has. Could even be argued that Al-Qaeda has, which is not recognizing the state of Israel. You know, even, you know, not wanting to change their charters. You know, the exact... very strong anti-Semitism, hatred of Jews, especially in Israel and worldwide. And in addition to that, not believing that the Holocaust existed. Now, the current leader and the climate in Iran, some people fear that Iran would attack Israel. My opinion is they're bluffing. I don't think they will. I don't think they can. And I think people also forget that Israel's not this weak little country. I mean, positioned... I understand the history and the religion, but I always say if I were a Jew, it's the worst bloody place you could pick to put a Jewish state is in the middle of all these Arab countries. You go down to the Caribbean. But, you know, that aside, nobody asked me. I want to know when we come back, Mark, should we fear the threats from Iran? Is that a bunch of hot air? And is striking Syria really going to change that? And can't Israel defend itself? And certainly we would come to their defense. They have arguably the greatest army in the world next to ours. And in addition to that, sorry, my 10-fold question here, I think Iran would be a parking lot in 48 hours if they attempted to strike Israel or struck Israel. We'll be back at Mark Levine's take on this and yours here on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. My partner in crime, I co-host this and every Thursday, Hour 2, and tonight, Hour 3 as well, Mark Levine. We'll be back to you and your calls. By the way, Jamal left us, so we have a line available, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back after this. And we're back. We are talking with my co-host and with all of you here on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. Mark Levine is my co-host. I am the other host, Leslie Marshall, and this is your show of For and By You. We're talking tonight about Syria. So many things to discuss. Want to get your take, taking more calls. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. We'll share your tweets as well. Mark, as always, thanks for holding. Let's continue and let's take, is it Mihad in D.C.? Am I saying the name right? Good evening.
You are. How are you?
It's amazing. Normally, I butcher everyone's name. Mihad, good evening and welcome.
Hello, Mihad.
Hey, guys.
What is your take on Syria and your opinion of the situation and where this stands in the president's decision to put this before Congress or a vote?
Sure. Well, as a Syrian American, I definitely don't want troops on the ground. But since the conflict started out, I definitely wanted to see some kind of intervention, not even involving ever at any point troops on the ground. And it's kind of disappointing to see that the president wants to seek congressional authorization because it ruins the element of surprise. This is now allowing Assad to move his arsenal around, busing even probably innocent people into areas that are going to be hit, using them as human shields. So I'm not too happy about this latest decision, but I am happy that he's finally going to take some kind of action.
Let me tell you my view on congressional action. I mean, you're right. There's no question Assad is repositioning his assets. But my hope is that Congress will not have a limiting resolution like one of the versions that's been popping around the Senate to give the president 60 days or 90 days. That's ridiculous. I want to give the president authority as commander-in-chief to act when and where he believes it's best. He is the leader of the military, and that means that if he wants to surprise Assad, he can. Now, it's true that a lot of Assad's conventional weapons can still be hit. For example, there's only some 20-odd places where planes can fly from Syria, and a lot of the damage that's done to civilians and to the Free Syrian Army is done by Syrian planes. And if there's no runways for them to land, then he can't fly those planes, and you can't move a runway. So there are definitely assets that we can attack without the element of surprise. And I understand what you mean, say, about giving up the element of surprise, but I also would say that the American people need to be taught that they haven't been following this, mostly because Obama was staying out of it, and they need to learn what's going on in Syria. That education takes time, and I'm glad we went to Congress, because I think that when we do attack Syria 2 weeks from now, we'll have a much more united country doing so than had he done so 2 weeks ago.
You do make a very valid point. At the same time, I would like to also add to that that Syria is a very secular country. I mean, extremism there is not a very rampant thing, at least before the revolution had started. And at this point, I feel like while we did not aid the FSA from the beginning, the Iranians and the Russians were giving a lot of aid to the Syrian regime. So unfortunately, by not taking any action, we kind of have pigeonholed ourselves into having to take action now. And if we don't take action as of right now, the consequences down the road are going to be much worse. And I think
let's talk about that. Let's talk.
Realize that this problem is not going to solve itself on its own.
Mihad, let's talk about that, because I do agree with what you've just said there. I think that you just hit the nail on the head. I want you to talk so that people understand, because the polls show a majority of Americans don't support this. I want you to talk about, Mihad, in your opinion and from your experience and your background, where this takes us if we do not act. Because I think that is the bigger question and the bigger risk and the bigger concern that Americans aren't looking at. They're looking at what happens if we do this, but what happens if we don't? Can you address that? And then, Mark, I'd love for you to weigh
in. What really, really scares me is that if we don't do anything, Assad will come out of this going, well, hey, I just gassed 1,400 people and there were no consequences to it. Later, he'll maybe, potentially win this war against the FSA, crush any kind of rebellion, and then start looking at other enemies in the region who have supported the FSA, like Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and then he can attack them with impunity. So it'll become something like the first Gulf War, where Saddam went into Kuwait, went into Saudi Arabia, and felt like he had a leverage on the United States with oil prices. So we don't want someone to have his head grow too big, because that's something that can definitely threaten us and threaten our interests in the region, energy interests, and eventually we can go into a very prolonged war where we lose a lot more American lives. Where as of right now, we don't have to risk any American lives. We can support the FSA, hit his arsenal, and have them win the war on their own and have them rebuild their Syria, and that way we don't even have to engage in nation building.
I strongly agree. I mean, people talk about this as if it were Iraq, and that really is, I don't want to insult anyone, but it's completely different. And people who think it's the same really need to study more. To me, the best examples, people say an air campaign can't succeed. I say not true. Look at Kosovo. Look at Libya. In both cases where we had armed troops on the ground that were not Americans, they were Kosovars, they were Libyans fighting for their own freedom, all we had to do was basically stop the Air Force from bombing them, and they won on the ground. That's exactly what we need to do in Syria. Frankly, the Free Syrian Army was winning on the ground, but the Syria army had control of the air. That's what Hafez Assad had. And I really think with something like a no-fly zone, and again, that's more than Obama's advocated, but something I've been advocating for at least a year and a half now, with a no-fly zone, we can actually even up the odds. We won't have to send any American troops on the ground. The Syrian people, the vast majority of them, hate Assad and want to get rid of him. We just have to help them even up the odds.
We're going to take a break. Don't go away. Mihad, let's just check with him, Zach, if he's done, if he had something else he wanted to say. I know we have a lot of people holding, and a lot of people holding a long time. We're coming to your calls, and we do take them in the order in which you are calling in. Just to be fair, there are timers that are next to your name, so I know how long, and Mark and I, co-host of the program, know how long you're holding. We are going to continue this into the next hour. We'll continue talking with you, and if you're holding, we will not lose your calls. Just hang with us. Hey there, America. Good evening, and welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy in talk radio. I'm Leslie Marshall, and every hour or two on the show, we have the Inside Scoop Edition. But tonight's hour three, and we're extending it tonight. My co-host in that Inside Scoop Edition of the program is Mark Levine. Pick up the phone and join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Follow us on Twitter. Mark is Mark Levine. Mark Levine Talk on Twitter. That's at Mark Levine Talk. And for me, it's at Leslie Marshall. We'll share your tweets in this hour. I didn't get to do much of that last hour. The phones are going crazy, and we certainly know why. Syria, Syria, Syria. And that's what we're talking about tonight. My co-host, you all know him, and he's not Mark Levin. He's Mark Levine. He hosts the Inside Scoop, by the way, in Washington, D.C., his own radio show. And he also hosts the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio 89.3 FM inside the Beltway. And it's more than a pleasure to have him as my co-host every Thursday, hour two, and to extend that hour tonight. Mark, thank you. We have so many calls. We'll get to them in just a second. I wanted to ask you, there are so many things that, you know, we have addressed. One thing that's really bothering me is Putin. I mean, so many reasons in addition to the how many, you know, naked chest shots I got to see this guy. But outright calling our Secretary of State a liar. Should our president have responded to that? And, I mean, is there any exaggeration going on here? I mean, Senator Kerry, although some would say he stopped short of saying there was 100% confirmation, there are others that have said that and people that said after classified briefings, there's no way anybody could come out and not say that at least specifically the August 21st attacks with over 1,400 people died, or 439 approximately were children. That number, some people are saying, oh, that number may be a bit high. Look, over 1,000 people died. Nearly half of those were children. We know it was chemical weapons. We know on that date it was definitely from Assad. You know, if it walks like a duck, it looks like a duck. Ergo, and like you had said in last hour, no comparison when we're talking about Iraq. So let's talk about Putin calling our Secretary of State a liar, also saying that he can replace what we destroy in Syria. I'm not afraid of Putin. I'm not afraid of Russia. And I think, as a matter of fact, the president might kind of get off doing anything Putin doesn't like at this point.
Well, I think a lot of it is saber-rattling. Russia has already said it will not respond militarily other than what it's been doing all along, which is giving Assad the latest weapons that he can use to massacre his own people. I mean, right now, Syria military is really not that strong. It's strong against its own people, because anytime a military turns on its own people, you know, you have people without arms, and you've got a military and planes and so forth, and that's what makes him strong, and he's being armed by Russia and Iran and Hezbollah. Let's be very clear what Putin Putin's motivation is. He's got the only warm water port Russia has, and frankly, probably the only colony Russia has left is Syria. That's not part of the former Soviet Union. They got a warm water part, warm water port on the Mediterranean, and Russia has been an ally of Syria's murderous thugs for decades now. So Putin definitely wants Syria there, but it's not because he doesn't believe that Syria has chemical weapons. There's no dispute. There never has been a dispute that Syria has chemical weapons, and there really is no dispute that they've used them. We not only have the evidence, the medical, strong medical evidence, we also have the fact that we apparently recorded them ordering the attack and then carrying out the attack. So there really could be no doubt about that. Let me just say one thing before we get to all our callers. I wrote a long op-ed called Never Again. You can find it on my website at marklevinetalk.com. Many of you have found it on another website. It's on the Politics website, Policy Mike, the Truman website, other places. When we're done with the show, I'd love if people would read it, because to me, this is far more than all the geopolitics, which I'm happy to discuss and are important. To me, this is a humanitarian crisis. It's not just the gas either. To me, when 100,000 innocent people are murdered, if we don't choose to act, then I would argue that we have no soul. You can't listen to the cries of people dying and do nothing. I don't think a moral human being can do that. So much broader than all the policy implications, which I'm happy to discuss, to me it's a basic humanitarian requirement, if we are human, to stop evil when we can.
Let's go to the calls. I'm very patient in holding Marine Dave in Spokane. Marine Dave, thank you for your patience, sweetie. Take your time. I know you got a lot to say on Syria, and you have been in a very different position than Mark and I, having served in the military, which, Mark, I don't believe you have.
No, I have not.
Marine, Dave, good evening, and thanks for joining us. What are your thoughts on Syria? And I know some of them. I know you and I agree on a lot of them.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, I'm very independent, like you know, so I'm going to agree when the agreeing is right or correct. And you are correct on a lot of things here, Leslie, on this topic. So I'm going to be right there. I want to throw in there with the co-hosting that you were talking about. I think you guys should consider like a co-host that maybe sometimes is going to have a contrasting viewpoint to yours and really exciting to listen to. You know, just think about that for later on.
But we do disagree occasionally, just so you know.
Marine Dave, here's the problem, okay? Here's the problem with that, seriously. I'll just address that real quick. One, I am carried on mostly this show, progressive stations who I don't want to anger the core of my audience. Two, don't think I haven't thought about it when I have a lot of conservative stations, although we are on a few. I got a lot of them that I'd like to be on, and not just as like a regular monthly member of the Huckabee Show now, example. That would expand our audience greatly and might make it more attractive. But you know, once in a while, yeah, but they got to hear me the rest of the time and they're too chicken to do that. But anyway, go ahead. And I'd rather be with somebody who I'm arguing with 100% of the time, because I'm going to have a bloody heart attack. I'm going to keep my blood pressure in check.
I wouldn't give you a heart attack, but hey, you know, some of your listeners, if they hated somebody, that'll make them listen even more. So, but you know, but anyway.
Sweetie, don't even get me started. Years ago, I always said, I tell people, you know, people nowadays in talk radio, and people hate when you say ratings on the air, but you know, I'm just transparent. Yeah. And these are not my ratings, but I'll just say, I'll hear people in markets like Los Angeles, where I live and work out of, they'll say, you know, they got a tooth share. And I laugh, because no joke, the first time I syndicated 1990 to 1993, I got, no joke, Tampa, Florida, 13 share.
Woo!
Buffalo, New York, 11 share. You know what I mean? And the reason for that was people would listen to, let's say, Rush Limbaugh and then me. Or me, and then Rush Limbaugh. So my audience would stick around to, you know, you know, annihilate him. His audience would stick around to attempt to annihilate me. And the thing that honestly made people listen to talk radio so much, in the beginning it was news, and then talking about the news and the opinion, the ability to call and talk to the host. But then it became the fights. And it became the dissension. It became the polarization. And honestly, and Mark, I think you would agree with me. I think that splitting talk radio into the progressive lineup and, you know, the liberal lineup and the conservative lineup, I think is ridiculous. Because
I agree. I like talking to conservatives. I like talking to liberals. I like talking to everybody. And some of my best conversations on the air have been with people I disagree with.
Absolutely. So, because, I mean, even though we're really lucky, we have a mix of people. Okay. We have people that agree with me all the time, never agree with me. And then, you know, agree with me some of the time. And, you know, it's been, oh my God, we agreed on this. And then the people that never agree with you that say, oh my God, we finally did agree. If you just have, which I would dare say Rush's show is, Rush Limbaugh, by the way, some of you may have heard of him. Rush Limbaugh's show is, why do they think they call themselves Ditto Head? Because everything he says, it's just ditto, ditto, ditto. And that's bloody boring to me, right, you know, as a listener of talk radio.
You're making me feel like I have to apologize for harpooning the show topic.
No. Don't worry.
I want to hear his opinion.
It's our job to get it back on track, and we will. So let's get back to it.
All right. Here we go. I do have something that I want to kind of go against Mark there a little bit, which you already are going to have heard some of this, Leslie. But before I get to that, I want to throw out something different that I haven't really heard too much yet. You know, I would like to see a world where the UN could be sort of the so-called police of the world, as I think the mean of the UN is supposed to be, that, hey, they look out for the greater good, and as a coalition, that you look stronger when you have a coalition. But unfortunately, the UN, maybe it's just my opinion, but they've looked extremely impotent over the years, especially the recent years, and they're more of a paper tiger. They will say they're going to do a lot of things. Look at all the resolutions with Iraq. You keep talking, and never do anything. You basically have no credibility, and so that's my problem with that. And since the UN cannot be that person, then who else is going to step up and be the person to so-called be the police of the world? I know a lot of people don't like it when they hear the U.S. being the police of the world, but ultimately it comes down to, and some people mention the Constitution. Well, I'm sorry, the Constitution doesn't expressly say we cannot or should not intervene, but it also doesn't say we should. You know, it's pretty much neutral on the topic. But my whole thing on that is that it reminds me of an analogy I bring up from high school. I just happened to be one of the kind of people in high school that I would defend people getting bullied. And was I required to? No. But, you know, you know that something is right or wrong. And if you believe in something and believe something is wrong and you want to stand up for it, you either stand up for it or you don't. And in this case,
okay, but let me ask you, because this is something you're saying very strongly. And, Dave, you are a former Marine. Mark, you're like, this is a humanitarian crisis. I mean, either we're going to be, human beings and address this or we aren't. Dave, from a military perspective, is the United States, in your opinion, responsible and should we be to run to every humanitarian crisis? And I say that because Mark weighed in on this as well. If that is the case, guys, you know, we had missionaries, I can't even say it, it grosses me out so much. They were nailed in China by their eyelids for preaching the Bible. There's a humanitarian crisis in North Korea. I mean, come on, those people don't have enough to eat in much part of that country. Cuba, I mean, seriously, does it have to be genocide and perceived? Does it have to be chemical? Okay, mass murder. It has to be mass murder. Dave?
Tens of thousands of dead innocent people, I guess, if I had to give a number. I realize they're...
So you agree, like me, historically, we should have got involved in the Holocaust and not waited until Pearl Harbor dragged us into the war.
I agree.
I agree with that, too, because I believe that that's a leadership decision, and I've gotten into this with you, Leslie, about leadership. But to your question, because you know I always like to address your questions. I don't sidestep like politicians. I will say that, I for those who don't know, I was a Marine pilot. I was a major in the Marine Corps. I believe that, yes, the United States is the best equipped, of the countries that could potentially do it to serve this role. And the problem is, it does stretch us thin. You could make a very good point that we're already stretched pretty thin. And so as in regard to us being there for all of the various conflicts around the world, it's just impossible. We can't be everywhere at once. You know, just like with the bully example, you can't defend everyone being bullied. And in some examples, I mean, if there's a case where the odds are overwhelming, you're going to pick your fights or where you can,
Exactly. That's why we can't do anything in China, for example.
Exactly. That's what I was referring to. And so you have to selectively pick what you're going to do. But I think who, if not us, who? And I still go back to, I believe most Americans, if they get into their conscience, are against these chemical wars. They don't like, if you look at how people have to suffer versus, a killing is killing in one respect, but dying from a bomb or a gunshot to the head is way different than the excruciating pain you go through with sarin gas. And so there is a difference there that needs to be noted. So I think if people get in their heart, they would accept that. And some of these people that say, well, it's not our fight, let them fight it. Well, you could make the same point then. They could have taken them back in time and say, we've got the whole Holocaust going on. Well, it's not our fight, let them fight it until something happens to get us into it. I think that's just crazy. If you're a leader and you believe in something, you act on what you believe in. And this is where I differ with Mark on, where he was saying, he's glad that we went to, you know, Congress because it gets the people involved, and that going to Congress was a good thing to do. And this is what you've heard me say, Leslie. In my opinion, that's a politician move, not a leadership move. From a leadership perspective, my leadership perspective is, as a leader, you look at all the available intelligence, and once you have available intelligence to confirm what you believe has happened, you put the line in the sand. Within 48 hours of that, it gives you a little time to move assets to the area and have a show of force as well. You take action.
And you know what? And you know I agreed with you on that, buddy. I really did. And on top of it, it shows consistency, especially when that's what you did, and quite successfully with Libya. Dave, I know that you were on hold like forever, but, you know, people are going to start, you know, having a hit put on me and Mark if we don't get to their calls as well. So I hope you understand we're going to let you go right now because we could talk to you all night. You know, I love you. And you better call us back tomorrow. We'll be back. Maureen, Dave, thank you for your call. My co-host in this hour and the last hour and hour two every Thursday here on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show is Mark Levine. Don't go away. We'll be back and joining you more on our Syria discussion. We continue our calls, we continue our discussion, and my co-host is Mark Levine. I'm Leslie Marshall. We are talking about Syria. Mark, thank you for holding. Mark is in Washington, D.C. I am in Los Angeles, so we're truly a bi-coastal show. Actually, we're a national and international show. And Mark is with me, co-host, Hour 2 every Thursday on the program, the Inside Scoop edition of the show. And we've extended it into Hour 3 because there's just so much to talk about with regard to the issue of Syria. Mark, let's take some more calls. How's that
sound?
Let's
do it.
Let's go to Springfield, Virginia with A.J., AJ, closer to your side of the country, Mark. AJ,
yep.
Good evening. Thank you for your patience and holding. What are your comments and your opinions on the matter of Syria?
Thank you, Leslie, for having me. I appreciate it. And I would like to thank Mark for being supportive of our cause, as always.
You're welcome.
It is very sad, Leslie, that this has to come, the crisis, to this point, that we are cheering for the fall of the Tomahawk and the cruise missiles over Damascus, one of the most anxious in the history, in the world. I mean, this is extremely sad. And I'm one of the people who are cheering for this attack, simply because this murderer is going to wipe out Syria from the map if we don't intervene. That guy's thugs, they were writing on the walls at the beginning of the revolt, Assad, or we're going to burn the country. And the path he's going, it is going to happen. So this is sad that intervention didn't happen earlier. But I'm extremely happy that Obama woke up finally and he realized that Assad is going to murder more people if he doesn't intervene immediately.
AJ, where are you originally from?
Damascus, Syria.
You are Syrian. You are Syrian.
AJ, are you
concerned? There are a lot of people saying a lot of things. Mark, of course, I want you to weigh in too. That there are a couple of things that can happen, right? An ideal situation is the strikes are brief, at most the 60 days. Much like Libya, they accomplish what they want. They give the opposition the ability to have more power and that they can overthrow Assad and then things can proceed. That would be the ideal situation. But some say that if this isn't done right, and it's very risky, and certainly the president knows risky, Osama bin Laden's death is an example of that, in Syria, that actually this could strengthen the Assad regime rather than the opposition. What are your thoughts as a Syrian-American on that, AJ? And Mark, I'd love you to weigh in after he does.
I don't think this is going to strengthen him. He is so fragile. And he is so strong against the Syrians only because he knows they are armless. Whatever the Free Syrian Army has is whatever they gained from the from his regime. And I don't believe this is going to strengthen him at all.
Okay, hold on, AJ, because I asked you a question. We didn't have much time. Hold on, sweetie, coming right back to you.
Sure.
And Mark will be with you as well because he's co-hosting the show with me. We'll continue when we come back. We are discussing strengthening of Assad, you know, in a sense, do our plans backfire and actually strengthen those we are out to weaken. And we'll also talk about if Assad is overthrown, who's in leadership and how does Al-Qaeda play into that? We'll be back. We're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. I'm in L.A. He's in D.C. And this show is heard throughout the world on the American Armed Forces Radio Network on military bases, on TuneIn, on iTunes, on Progressive Voices, and of course on your radio, as well as our stream, LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. Mark is my co-host every Thursday, hour two, for the Inside Scoop edition of the program, and we've extended it into hour three tonight because we're talking about Syria. There's so much to say and so many people and calls to get to. Before the break, we were talking with AJ in Springfield, Virginia. He is originally from Damascus, so he's a Syrian American, and AJ was giving us his opinion. I had posed the question to him and to Mark, and AJ just started to respond about Assad's forces actually being strengthened by our action that is being proposed, as some opponents of this action have suggested or perhaps fear. AJ, please, if you could start over, because you started and then we had to go to break.
Sure. I don't believe, as I said, that he's going to be strengthened if we, you know, don't act, or if the attack is not sufficient. I hope it's going to be sufficient, and the Free Syrian Army is going to finish the work. As a matter of fact, the Free Syrian Army doesn't want any boots on the ground from the Americans. They've always needed from the Americans a no-fly zone, so they don't allow his planes to bomb all over the, especially the northern part where it's freed already and controlled completely by the Free Syrian Army. So he has advances, of course. And one more thing I wanted to add, that an intervention by the U.S. has become a necessity at this point, because the way the situation is going in Syria is remind me with the collapse of the Soviet Union, where there's no law and order and it becomes fiasco, everything becomes for sale. So the people who are responsible for securing those facilities are going to sell those WMDs, because he has an extremely corrupted army, and you really can't trust someone who kills his own people. So I've heard so many stories from activists inside Syria. Free Syrian Army were buying weapons from thugs of his regime. They were selling them to the Free Syrian Army. So is that an army you can trust? Is that a regime you can really put any trust in? He is willing to do anything it takes to stay in power. He is willing to burn down the country. And eventually, a chaos, when the country becomes a chaos point, this weapon will become extremely dangerous to everybody, including the U.S. So I do agree an intervention is extremely necessary at this point.
Mark?
Well, first of all, I really want to thank AJ for calling. AJ's called in the show many times when I've talked about this topic for the past 2 years, and I really appreciate both his passion and his knowledge as a Syrian American, as a former resident of Damascus. The one thing I would say is, while I completely agree with AJ that we need a no-fly zone, I am concerned, Leslie, that we won't do enough. I mean, any attack, I guess.
And for people that know terminology, right? But Mark, seriously, so people understand. What is the difference between, and what happens with a no-fly zone, as we did with Libya, as opposed to what we're doing now with Syria without that?
Well, there's a huge difference. Basically, I fear that President Obama will shoot off 10, 20, 30 cruise missiles, hit some government buildings, maybe some runways, and call it a day. And I also fear a Senate or House resolution that sets a time frame of 60 or 90 days or something silly like that. I want a no-fly zone. That's what we did in Kosovo. That's what we did in Libya. A no-fly zone says that we keep Syria from flying. We keep them from having bombers in the air that have been massacring men, women, and children, that have been wiping out villages, that have been destroying the Free Syrian
Army. And so that people
army.
Fully that, understand. I understand. So people fully understand. When we have a no-fly zone, that means if Assad flies, we or someone shoots him down, right?
That's right. And that takes a lot more effort, to be fair. It does. I mean, we have to knock out his anti-aircraft missiles. It's a much more involved thing than I think President Obama wants. But it is similar to what we did in Kosovo and Libya. And I should remind people who don't remember, we did not lose a single American life, a single American casualty in either Kosovo or Libya. That doesn't mean that it's impossible that they couldn't shoot a plane down. They could. But they didn't shoot a single plane down in Kosovo or Libya. We didn't lose a single American life. It did cost some money. Actually, I think Saudi Arabia would pay for most of it. But in the meantime, we saved tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives, I would argue, in both Kosovo and Libya. In Syria, I think we could save millions of lives, because in addition to the 100,000 already murdered, there's 2 million refugees outside of Syria. There's 4 million internal refugees in Syria. And if you've heard from some of these camps in Jordan, they're horrific. And the other thing to remember is that more than 1 million of the refugees are children under 11. So we would be saving millions of lives. I fear that Obama will do too little. You know, one of the reasons why I support congressional authorization is I think that getting the country back...
We can do more. Fearing that you know, you feel the president may be even doing too little, are you more in agreement with McCain?
I am. Look, you know, I disagree with John McCain strongly on domestic policy. You know, Leslie, we've been on the air a long time together. I certainly supported Obama over McCain. On this one issue, I have to admit it. I do agree with McCain. I agree with Lindsey Graham on this issue. I do.
Okay. All right. AJ, one last thing. Fear of Al-Qaeda being in power. Hezbollah is now, you know, working with Assad and has been. Al-Qaeda has been... over the past months, more so this past year, helping the opposition. Americans fearing, like they saw with Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood, that if America gets involved in this and if we help the opposition and they do overthrow Assad, that Al-Qaeda will be in control. And, of course, that scares the living bejesus out of Americans, because you would have Al-Qaeda factions, politically powerful in Syria, Muslim Brotherhood factions politically powerful in Egypt, and, of course, we have Hamas very politically powerful and freely elected in one of two Palestinian territories in Israel. AJ?
It is AJ?
Is that question for me, Leslie?
Yes, the question's for you.
Yeah. Well, Assad has played the media very well. He's a devil. We're not going to say that he's a stupid. He's a devil. There is no doubt about that. I bet you, from what I've heard from activists inside Syria and members of the Free Syrian Army, that the Jabha Front, Nusra Front, and the Al-Qaeda and all those Salafi and fanatic people, they were primarily created by him, and they were supported by his cousin, Ami Makhlouf, who is running the wealth of the whole family. And they were created and made of videos eating hearts of people and just slaughtering people to convince the Western that he is fighting terrorism. And he opened the border for all those people, invited them. And he has so many of those members imprisoned for many years. He set them free. And he's done that during the invasion of Iraq. And he promised them freedom. And he was sending them to the borders to Iraq. And he was telling them, go fight. Go do what we're telling you. You're going to come back. You're going to have a freedom. And they were promised so many prizes. So I don't believe, even if there is some fanatics or Al-Qaeda, they are very minimal. There are just few groups. And the Free Syrian Army at least formed 95 to 99% of the rebellions. And I don't think a secular country like Syria will ever accept fanatic people like those to rule them or take over anything.
Okay, we're going to take a break. AJ, thank you very much for your call and appreciate it. And I certainly hope your family and anyone back in Syria and Damascus are well in spite of the atrocities taking place there. Until we can get the American cavalry to come in and hopefully save the day, right? My co-host is Mark Levine. I'm Leslie Marshall. Quick break. We'll be back to you. I know some of you have been holding a very, very long time. We will take your phone calls right after this, 888-653-7543. And if time, we'll share some tweets. A lot of people making comments and tweeting or listening to the show tonight. We appreciate your support. I'm sorry if I haven't mentioned your tweet or if you asked a question and we haven't responded yet. We'll be back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Mark Levine's my co-host. Don't go away. Hey there, America. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. I'm in L.A. He's in D.C. And we are co-hosting the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show every Thursday, Hour 2, extended into Hour 3 tonight, talking Syria. Mark, let's take more calls. A lot of people very patient and holding and have a lot to say. You're in neck of the woods again. D.C., we go to Sam. Sam, good evening. Thank you for joining us. What is your take on this question, comment, etc.?
Good evening.
Good evening.
What a coincidence to get two Syrians in a row. One with and one against.
Ah.
Against any form of war action. Peacefully, together, we can resolve these matters. And I believe very strongly, when I just overheard the other gentleman, who is originally from Syria, from Damascus, asking the cruise missiles to rain down on Damascus, made me sick to my stomach.
Okay, I'm getting chills just hearing you talk. Sam, so that we're clear, are you, and believe me, it's fine to be either, you know, you are entitled, as you know, in America to your opinion. You know what I mean? Nobody's coming to knock on your door.
I understand.
Are you an Assad supporter or an opposition supporter?
I'm a supporter of peace. I think we could resolve this whole issue in Syria by dialogue.
How, Sam?
We could resolve this whole matter.
Russia doesn't want to have dialogue.
Sam, hang on, because I know Mark wants to weigh in, and I want him to ask you, because when you talk about peace, we all want peace.
I would like to get a little bit more time.
Oh, no, you'll get more time. You'll get more time.
I don't want to come. I just want to ask a question, Sam, because it seems to me that there has been many attempts at dialogue, and Assad doesn't want dialogue, and the Russians don't want dialogue. How do you think that peace can be achieved without cruise missiles? I really want to know.
Okay, I will explain to you exactly how could be achieved. If you do follow the news very carefully, and I assume you do, Syrian government has asked for a dialogue. The other side never made it to the table. They asked on numerous occasions, and they never made it to the table. They always put obstacles because they don't want dialogue. They want chaos.
Sam, the only thing the opposition requires is that Assad no longer be in power.
You know, they called on many occasions for a dialogue, and they're ready, but the other side never made it to the table. They want this chaos and whatever is going on in Syria to keep on going. This is like they love this kind of atmosphere. It's like a fertilizer for them, where it's chaos. That's how they grow. They want to keep on killing. I just overheard news on the way home today that they just invaded. Those armed jihadist group invaded one of the oldest towns on the planet that spoke the language of Jesus Christ, Aramaics, and they invaded it and they start burning down the churches. Those are the kind of people that Mr. Obama, our president, wants to help. Those are the people, the liver eaters. Those are the people who we saw all the black flags of Al-Qaeda flying all over Syria and every area they are. Those are the people who he wants to help. I believe we are helping the wrong people, and I believe if we go in, we go in for the wrong reasons. I believe we should get all our facts straight. I could give you dates and numbers on number of occasions. On the first time, there was a chemical attack in Syria. Syria has called on the UN resolution and a team to come in and inspect. It was held in the UN for over 5 months. Nobody went in. In Aleppo, it's called Khan al-Asal. The Syrian government called the team to come in and nobody showed up. So, second time, a chemical agent were found with same kind of group of people in Turkey. That's reported by the Turkish government. So, these people, they have those kind of chemical agents. How they obtained them? How they got a hold of them? That's not me. I'm not an analyst.
But Sam, we're running out of time.
Sam, hang on. I just want Mark to
yeah, we're running out of time. Let me say this.
Sam, we're not cutting you off or hanging up.
All next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we'll have a lot more time. And Sam, I welcome you calling back. I do think, though,
we're not done. We will give you a couple of minutes. We need to have a conversation, and we can't do that. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
And like I said, you could have more time if you call in next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. I have 3 hours each day. We'll devote a lot of time to Syria. I do think you're incorrect, though. Syria has done everything to prevent the U.N. inspectors from going in. While they've gone in and they bombed the area to destroy any evidence of the chemical weapons, they've tried to. They even shot at the inspectors going in. Assad has not been willing to negotiate any way where he would no longer be in power. He's absolutely refused to. So I'm afraid I don't agree with your information here. That's simply not the information that is coming out, either from Syria
I speak on calling a UN investigation team, that's on record. I'm not bringing you facts. I can give you dates and numbers. I'm not telling you, I'm not taking anybody's sides. I want peace in this area. It doesn't matter who rules, who takes over. I'm saying peace. These people are the same people who we've been fighting for over 15 years. These are the same groups who came here and bombed us. These are the same groups who we are fighting in Iraq for 13 years. These are the same. They might have a different look today. They might look a little bit, try to ally with us in the U.S., so we can come and bomb Syria, and after that, what's going to happen? We don't trust them. These people are the same people. They call themselves a Syrian Free Army. If you are a Syrian army in your name, how do you ask for cruise missiles to bomb Syria if you are called the Syrian army? How do you ask?
In my view, what we should bomb are things like runways that are used by Syrian planes
I'm
gonna
get
to go up
the subject.
Air. And massacre people. What I would bomb. I obviously wouldn't bomb any civilian targets or anything like that. And neither
Sam, calm. Let you talk to each other.
Obviously, I feel your passion and I respect it. But I'm afraid that, look, I've been following this very closely for 2 years. I've heard from Syrians, people like AJ, people who came two years ago. There was no Al Qaeda in Syria. They were completely pacifists. There was a young man. Who put roses in the guns of the Syrian army, and he was shot dead by Assad. So I realize it's a terrible situation now, but I don't think you can blame the Free Syrian Army for that.
I believe, as we have our principles in the world as Americans, that we don't say we have a phone call. We are the United States of America. We have credibility around the world. We say we have a phone call. How could you sit in front of head of state and say we have a phone call, recorded phone call, and go bomb a country? We need some strong, solid evidence. We need to know facts. Oh, we have a recorded phone call. You know, I don't understand. I don't understand. We said we're going to go take out Saddam Hussein. In 13 years, we took out 2 million lives.
Now, I agree, and I oppose the war in Iraq, Sam. But
you know,
be
you
clear
know,
here.
You know,
only the Syrian government
facility in Syria.
Had
access
to those chemical
weapons. Another million lives. Peace, my friend, peace.
I agree, Sam. I think that doing nothing is the reason why so many have died. I think if we had taken action 2 years ago, there would have been 3,000 Syrians dead and not 100,000 Syrians dead. And I think if we don't take action now, in 1 year there'll be 200,000 Syrians dead. I firmly believe that. I'm sorry. I really do. And a lot of Syrians agree with me.
Let's go to Sam. Thank you for your call. And like Mark said, he'll be sitting in for me. And next week I'm talking about this. And we hope you'll call back, because when we do have to get some other callers, let's go to Maisha in New Jersey. Hi, Maisha. I'm sorry. Maisha, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, I was listening to Sam and to the other guy as well. Yes, we are supposed to open a dialogue between us, at least as a Syrian in America. But one comment I want to give it to this the guy who is pro-Assad. He's always repeating that we are with peace, we are with peace. We are with peace too. And we want, you know, we want our people to live in peace as well. But the problem is, I want to say something only very, very logic. If the president of the country cannot defend his own people or cannot protect his own people from those terrorist or extremist group the way that they're talking about, he's supposed to step down and give the power to somebody else. That means he's not qualified to protect his own country. If we believe that he's not bombing the country and he's not using the chemical weapon against his own people, okay, that means he cannot protect this country and he's not qualified to be a president of Syria anymore. So let him step down with peacefully, without any intervention from any other country. I think this is the best solution. But the thing is, I want to say, I'm a Syrian American. I'm from Damascus. All my family is still in Damascus, and I am with Obama for this intervention. I was feeling 2.5 years now when we saw all those people being killed and murdered in tall shirt and all the children, the refugees, and the women outside. We have no solution. Now the Free Syrian Army is not qualified to just defend the people over there. And the one who opened the door for those extremists to be in the country is Bashar Assad himself. When he entered Hezbollah, which is the big terrorist group to fight the Syrian people and to kill the Syrian people in Homs.
I'm not cutting you off. We are out of time in the show. So it's not out of time in the hour, out of time in the segment. And we tried to get to everybody. So many people holding, so many people tweeting. We just didn't get to it. But I'm back tomorrow. Leslie Marshall and Mark Levine, my co-host, will be back next week sitting in for me. And right here on the Leslie Marshall Show. Have a great night.